Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. You know, I saw an article today that showed up in my inbox. I mean, I'm subscribed to these different sources. Okay, just so you know where this stuff comes from, it comes from sources that I deem credible. That's right. I look at a lot of stuff out there, and a lot of that stuff that I look at is just nonsense. It's just nonsense. It's marketing come-ons. It's hype. It's hyperbole. It's opinions that really don't have any foundation in truth. Yeah, so a lot of the stuff that's floating around out there with regards to real estate investing, it's just mumbo jumbo. It really is. And the reason I know this is because I took the time to educate myself about how to correctly invest in income-producing residential real estate properties. That's what I do. And by doing that correctly, I was able to retire myself. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the crux of everything. So, okay, so let's go back to my little mini rant at the beginning of the show. So I get this article that comes in, and I'm thinking, man, this sounds really good. And here, I'll read you the headline, because it's the headline makes you go, all right, there's going to be some meat here. There's going to be some substantial meat here. So here's how the article came across. Oh, by the way, it came from Wealth Management, wealthmanagement.com. I've got to source them, because I'll be honest with you, they do put out some good content. They really do. Now, everything they put out isn't necessarily focused on what I'm interested in, but you know, when you want to find out what's going on in different real estate sectors, in other words, different types of real estate, wealthmanagement.com, they write about that stuff too. Now, I pay attention to that just because I'm curious as to what's going on over there, but I don't invest in those modalities. Because if I didn't learn anything over the last year, I certainly learned that people need a place to live. They do. So when I saw this article come across, I thought, okay, this is it, man. And here's how the article's titled. Freddie, Fannie. Okay, so if you don't know who Freddie and Fannie are, it's not your long-lost uncle and aunt, you know, three times removed from your Uncle Bobby or anything like that. No, Freddie and Fannie are these giant quasi-private public entities. I mean, I don't even know how to describe these things. I really don't. They're the word abomination kind of came to my mind, but that's not the word I want to use. They're just these entities, and their real source, I mean, the real purpose, I should say, in the markets is to make sure capital is flowing into the real estate markets. So what these guys do is they tend to set guidelines for what conforming requirements are for loans that these entities will back. Yeah, that's who these guys are. They're not really guys. They're just, like I said, faceless entities. But they're the ones that basically say, hey, Bobby, we got your back. That's right. That house you bought over there, that house that you put 20% down on, we backed that 80% loan. That's right. We're Freddie. We're Fannie. We got your back. Yeah, so that's what they do, is they buy loan products. In other words, the loans that you and I create when we invest in our properties. So they buy those loans from mortgage originators. Okay, could be a loan broker, could be a bank, could be a credit union. Whoever originates the loans, they give us the money to purchase the property. But when we take the money out of their coffers, it depletes the amount of money they can loan out. I mean, it's kind of like a gas tank. You take stuff out of it, it's going to go down, right? Okay. So how Freddie and Fannie come into the equation is they buy these loans on the secondary market. So in other words, that lender you and I got a loan from, that lender turned around and probably within the next 30 to 45 days, they have sold it on the secondary housing market to a Freddie and Fannie type of entity that buys these things. Yeah, which what happens for your mortgage broker is it when that mortgage gets off their books, then all of a sudden the cash flows back in and they can loan that money back out. That's kind of how the mortgage industry makes its money. Yeah. So when I saw this, when I saw Freddie and Fannie offer lower interest rate to spur workforce housing development, I thought, you know what? This is it. This is the big ticket. Finally, the government, the federal government has figured out that we have a housing problem. Yeah, in the federal government's infinite wisdom, they have figured out that we have a housing problem. And that housing problem is really in the workforce housing sector. Those people that work daily in whatever industry they're in, they need a place to live. That's right. They need a place to live. And one of the things that I do is I provide that clean, functional workforce housing that's as nice, if not better, than everything else in the neighborhood. And I don't charge above market rents for it. I charge right just a little bit below what fair market rents are because I want to give my residents a little bit of a break. Yeah. So I saw this and I thought, okay, this is good stuff. So what the government has decided is that owners of apartment properties, okay, this is really focused in the multifamily space. Owners of apartment properties can get lower interest rates from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae lenders if, here's the key, if they promise to set rents that are affordable to moderate income families. Yeah, sounds pretty good, right? Okay, so when we come back from the break, I'm going to break down what these entities are up to and let you know that maybe they might be pulling the wool over our eyes. Stick around.
Del Wamsley talks about finding that one thing that made sense for the lifestyle.
I looked at franchises. I looked at multi-level marketing. I looked at everything in the world. But nothing made as much sense as buying one simple little rental property.
Real estate is your best option. Real estate makes sense. Lifestyles Unlimited will teach you how to buy your first rental property. Join our live online free workshop to find out more. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
As I sit here and read article after article and see TV show after TV show, the normal person out there on the street cannot overcome their fear to get to the analytical part of this whole process. I'm not afraid of, and I'm actually ready for a recession, a crash of value of anything and everything. Why? It is the opportunity to do incredible stuff. But that's my analytical brain.
The United States has a very strong economy. We will return to our basic economic foundation. This is not going to be the end of the world for everyone. But you do need to take some action. And some actions will be more productive than others. And one of the things that I think you can do now is take this time, like you said, Del, people are going to be sitting at home, and you have a time right now to change your life. Make what you have work for you.
You need to get into lifestyles right now.
Join us for our free online workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so back in March, President Biden put together, a pretty comprehensive plan. And in that plan, he called it the American Jobs Plan. I mean, this is a real thing. I mean, this is something that presidents do. And I'm not picking on Joe Biden or anything like that. But it's a very long list of things that the president believes are problematic with our country, things that we need to work on to remedy, because there are issues out there. So as I'm digging through this plan, one of the things that about halfway down this plan, this is a very long document, by the way. This is not, you know, like a couple of little things on the to-do list. This is a very, very long list of things that, to be honest with you, the president wants to invest in to our country. I mean, he wants to take taxpayer money. He wants to work on things that he thinks are important to the future of this country. And one of those things just happens to address something called affordable housing. Yeah. So let me read to you what they say. And in this segment specifically says, build, preserve, and retrofit more than 2 million homes and commercial buildings. Okay, so these commercial buildings are really multifamily apartment communities. That's really what they're referring to there. Modernize our nation's schools, community colleges, and early learning facilities, and upgrade veterans' hospitals. Okay, so this section here is talking about dealing with, you know, where we live and where we essentially go to school, and maybe some things that the veterans take advantage of. So let me read this segment. I know I'm reading a lot, and I apologize for that. They make a very bold statement. They say there is a severe shortage of affordable housing options in America. Yeah, I actually agree. I do agree. There is a severe shortage of affordable housing options in America. And the reason why there's a shortage is because America has not done a good job. I know my eighth grade English teacher is just rolling over in her grave right now. Anyway, we as a country, there's a better way of saying it, have not built enough housing to support the demographic of our country. Yeah, there's like, what, 320 million of us here? I don't know if the number of, I'm giving you a swag. 320 million of us. And with the exception of the people that choose to be homeless, everybody needs a place to live. Yeah. Now, we don't necessarily need 320 million housing units because, you know, spouses have a tendency to live together and then they have a tendency to have kids. So you have multiple people kind of living in a household, right? Okay. So yeah, but here's the thing. The government is recognizing there's a shortage of affordable housing. Okay. And they call affordable housing some form of housing where the rent or the monthly payment does not exceed a certain benchmark of income. And I'm not going to get into that right now. But here's the other thing. They believe that we must invest in building and upgrading. Yeah, we must invest in building and upgrading. And that's all fine and dandy. But one of the things that they're not really addressing here, they're not really addressing existing housing stocks. There are housing stocks out there in our country that are worn out. They're beaten up. They've been used and abused. And people don't want to live in them because they're kind of nasty places to live. Yeah, maybe they got roof problems. Maybe they got foundation problems. Maybe you got problems with the other residents that live there. I mean, there's a lot of things that could create that. But getting back to the White House, they specifically said this. There's a shortage, a severe shortage. They use the word severe shortage of affordable housing options in America. Yeah. So what they're saying is that it's getting expensive for people to find a place to live. Millions of families pay more than half their income on rent. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't know where they got that stat from. Maybe there are people that actually do that. I'm not interested in renting to anyone that has to give me half of their income because that tells me they can't afford to live, affordable housing, right? They can't afford to live in my particular property. And I will essentially turn them down for residency because I'm concerned that if they're spending so much money just on rent, what are they going to use for money for all those other costs associated with living. So I really want my residents to be no more than a third. I'd prefer them to be right in the 25%. Okay, so just a side note for you. Okay, and then they add in home energy costs. Okay, so the government is saying home energy costs are helping to push that cost up. All right. And across the country, people are struggling to purchase their first home. Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to tell you this. Based on my reading of the United States Constitution, there's nothing in the Constitution that I saw that said you have the right to own property in the United States. Now, you do have the right to own property in the United States. You absolutely do. That part is in there. But there's nothing in there that says you as an American are entitled to buy your first home. Yeah. I mean, we're an economy, an economic engine, if you will, this entire country that is based off of trading goods and services with each other to increase our income streams, to increase our wealth. Some people play in that arena very well. Some people don't. Some people don't want to mess with it. I get that. But my opinion is this. I don't think people have the right to own their first piece of real estate as a single family home. I don't. And I'm not saying and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying people should not buy property. That's not what I'm saying. I just think that if you go back and you look at what was going on before the 2008 housing meltdown, what was going on there was a lot of things that the government was doing, and it went all, I mean, you can trace this all the way back, went all the way back to the Carter administration, where they were focused on trying to make the ownership of a house the American dream. I mean, that was part of the American dream they were selling us, right? So you should be able to own a house. So they started doing things back in the Carter administration that were also worked on during the Clinton administration towards this goal. And unfortunately, the result of them toying around with the mortgage industry was they pulled all these requirements off the mortgage industry to qualify for notes. So you had people qualifying for properties that had no business qualifying for properties, which actually had an impact on people trying to buy their own first property. Yeah, and some people are saying we're in that place right now. We're in that place right now. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think we are. I don't think we are. The government has not relaxed the standards on qualification for mortgages. As a matter of fact, they've made it a little bit more difficult. Hey, when we come back from the break, I owe you some information talking about the reduction in interest. Stick around.
Del Wamsley talks about positive cash flow tax-free.
I bought one little rent house. So a month later, I bought three more. Now I started receiving even more positive cash flow. $880 a month positive cash flow after just 2 months. This cash flow was tax-free because of the way I did it. Because if you know how to do it the right way, you won't pay taxes on that.
Give yourself a raise. Tax-free. Find out how at Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Register today at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Warning, listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. So, at the break, I started messing around with the calculators and tried to make some sense out of what the White House is proposing. Because when I saw this headline, I'll tell you what, I thought, man, you know, the government's finally getting its head in the right place to focus on an issue that's been around, to be honest with you, since I've been alive. I remember the government talking about concerns regarding affordable housing my entire life. I'm 57 years old, and I've been hearing this stuff my entire life. So I thought, okay, well, maybe they've figured something out. So as I'm reading through this article, and the article was well written by a gentleman by the name of Bendix Anderson. He writes for wealthmanagement.com. And I went down to the part that shows me the financial impact. Yeah, I mean, and trust me, I had to dig through the article a little bit. Bendix, by the way, he does a great job. Every time I read one of his articles, they're really good. But here's the thing. Here's the meat and potatoes. Bendix is describing that the apartment communities, or the apartment properties, as he calls it, can get interest rates that are often 20 to 30 basis points lower than usual for permanent financing from Fannie Mae lenders. And that was a quote that came from CBRE. So I thought, okay. So now some people are thinking, all right, what's 20 to 30 basis points? I mean, that sounds like a lot, right? Well, it's basically a quarter of a percent of interest. Yeah, so when I jumped onto my calculators, I thought, okay, well let's just, for giggles and grins, let's just say we buy a small apartment community. Let's say we spend $2 million on this thing. And let's say we put, I don't know, 25% down. Okay. I'm just going with some numbers here. Meaning we're gonna take out a loan for 75% of the value. And then I ran my numbers based on a 30-year note, and I said, okay, what is the difference between my loan payment at a certain rate, and I just said 3.75%, because it's an easily attainable number in today's markets, and the math is kind of easy. So that payment, and it's just principal and interest, by the way, works out to be 69.46 and 73 cents. That would be your monthly payment. And then if you got that quarter of a percent interest rate cut, in other words, you went down to 3.5%, that would change your principal and interest payments. It would be in your favor. Your principal and interest payments would be lower. They would be $6,735.67. So what's the delta? What's the difference between the two? Well, the difference between the two is a cost savings of $211.06. Okay, so that's $211 every month that you're not paying into a property. So it sounds like it's kind of a good deal, right? Well, you know, you really have to kind of step back and you have to look at the whole thing. And I will tell you this, if you are buying property specifically to try and take advantage of what the government is throwing out there, then you're kind of missing the mark. You really are. Because if a $211 a month difference in your mortgage payment on a $2 million property is the difference between you being successful and not being successful, then there's a whole lot wrong with the entire picture. There really is. So I read a little further down. I did read a little further down. And what I saw was an indication that Freddie Mac, the other quasi-governmental, private, public entity, whatever these things are, Freddie Mac was also offering lower pricings to properties that are considered affordable to moderate income residents since 2018. So Freddie Mac's been doing this for quite a while. As a matter of fact, in that program, you can actually get maybe possibly, because there's no guarantees for anything. But if you agree to set your rents to a certain price point and not exceed that price point, you might get a 60 to 80% reduction, possibly, in your basis point. So there may be a little bit more meat on the bone for you there. But let's step back and let's look at it from a different perspective. Why not let the market dictate what you can rent property for? Yeah, the government gets wrapped around the fact that things in this country cost money, that things in this country are not necessarily free unless the government gives them to you, right? Okay, so, or somebody else gives them to you. I mean, that happens. There are good people in this country that will share with you. I've met a lot of them. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the whole Lifestyles Unlimited community is filled with them because we all share information with each other. But I'm getting on a rabbit hole. I need to get back. So let's say this $2 million property that we're looking at, let's say it's a 20-unit apartment community, and you have renovated the property. You've taken a property that was in pretty bad shape, and you've breathed new life into it. You've made this nice apartment community that people don't mind calling home. And maybe there's some amenities for the families that live there. And people are willing to rent those properties because they're clean, functional workforce housing. And because we're competitive in the marketplace, we're not charging exorbitant amounts for these properties. We're letting the market determine what the rental value of the property is based on, you know, what are other things trading for in the marketplace. That's how things work in a marketplace, right? At least in our real estate markets. So if you think about it this way, by agreeing, or at least the way this thing is written, you have to promise that you will set your rents at a certain rate. There's not a whole lot of meat and potatoes here that tells me that after you make that promise, anybody's going to like follow up on you. Okay, so this may be one of these things where you go, oh, I promise, and then you never get around to the promise, so it becomes a little white lie, which is really a lie, right? And then all of a sudden you got a better interest rate, but you didn't do what the government wanted you to do anyway, right? Well, let's look at it from a different perspective. What if you were able to operate this apartment community, and because the market allowed you to do it, let's say it's just 20 units. Let's just say it's 20 units. And let's say you were able to raise the rents on all of the units by just an easy $25. We are not going with massive rent bumps or anything like that. Okay. We're just saying we took over a property that maybe had some issues, but was in pretty good shape. And as a result of that, we're just going to kind of keep things going, make some improvements along the way, but we're going to push rents up a little bit, maybe $25 a month. So if you look at $25 a month and you multiply that by 20, that gives you a $500 a month increase in revenues, as opposed to trying to operate this property so that you can meet the status that the government's going to require you to meet so that you can save $200 a month. I would rather get the extra $500 in income. And here's why. Multifamily properties are valued based on the income streams that they produce. They are not valued based on the cost of the debt. No, they're valued based on the income streams. You are much better off getting an increase in income streams than you are getting a reduction in your interest rates. We come back from the break. I've got some more information I want to share with you. Stick around.
Here's Lifestyles Unlimited founder and CEO, self-made multimillionaire, and national radio host, Del Wamsley, on getting the information you need to get through this.
So you ask yourself, isn't this the wrong time to get out of the stock market? Very well could be. But maybe it might go down. And then you ask yourself, man, if I would have had some of that money, I could have used it. People are going to be afraid. And the people who are in real estate that are losing money are going to be afraid. And they're going to want to get out. And when they do, we're going to be able to go in and buy at very advantageous prices that are going to change our family's future, quite honestly. So you need information on how to do that. You need the knowledge of how to get through this. You need to get into Lifestyles right now.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. So we're talking about, you know, the government trying to do the right thing to actually try and help out people in workforce housing. Because here's what I think is going on in our economy right now when it comes to housing stock. First of all, we're short housing stock. We don't have enough qualified housing stock for the demand that's out there. Yeah, that's part of what's pushing prices upwards. I mean, I was looking at one of the MLS systems for one of the communities that I follow, because those are communities that I invest in. And, you know, I've just noticed that anything like on the single family market, anything that seems to be on the market for $100,000 or less is like pending all of a sudden. It's just pending. So why is that? Why is that? Is that because those properties are a great deal right now? Or is it because prices have gone up so much that maybe people want to get involved with flipping? Because maybe now, because the prices are higher, maybe they get, there's a better margin. I don't know. I don't know. And I don't want to turn this into a economics dissertation. I don't want to go there. But I do know this. Prices for housing are going up. Prices for rents are also going up. Not as dramatically as housing is, but man, I'll tell you what, rents are moving northward. So the federal government wants to incentivize us as real estate investors, give us maybe a break on our loans if we do a couple of things to qualify for that break. And really, I mean, at the end of the day, this is what they want you to do. So what you have to do if you're a multifamily investor is you have to state that the rents that you set are affordable to moderate income families. Yeah, yeah. And let me just read to you what it says here in the byline. These affordable rents may not be lower than unrestricted market rate rents in some places, especially for older apartments. Cha-ching, that's kind of what we buy. We buy those things that have been worn out and we breathe new life back into them. So here's my point. When you're buying something that's worn out, let's say you buy, we've been talking about a $2 million property, right? So let's say we bought that $2 million property really for $1 million because there were a lot of things wrong with it. We had to do improvements on that property. We had to, you know, help people understand that that was not the right place for them to live because, you know, they either didn't have a lease or maybe they weren't paying on a lease that they had, you know, whatever. There are people like that that will just kind of hang out until you tell them to go away, and then they'll go away. So think about it. Let's say you get to a point where you've created value in this property. And the thing is this, just because you fixed up that $1 million property, that doesn't make it a $2 million property. What makes it a $2 million property is the income streams that come from that property. And debt has no bearing on the value of your property. It doesn't. Now, debt has a bearing on your returns. And I absolutely love a lender that is willing to come in and be my partner and loan me up to 80% of the value of a property, because I only have to come to the table with 20%. And what's even better, they don't participate in the increase in valuation that I create on this property. They don't. All of those gains are mine. I don't share those with the lender, which is really cool. So, you know, getting that $200 break on our interest per month, I mean, that's not a deal breaker. I'll take it, but it's not a deal breaker. But it's sounding like what the government's trying to do is they're trying to re-divert some funds. See, Freddie and Fannie, they buy loans on a lot of stuff. On a lot of stuff. We're talking about single family homes. We're talking about duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. We're talking about small multifamily apartment communities. We're talking about large multifamily apartment communities. They buy all that debt on the secondary market. to free up money so that people like you and I can borrow from our mortgage brokers to go out and buy these distressed assets. So now we fix this property up and we put it into service, and now we've got the property producing income streams for us. And those income streams, when we take the income and we subtract all expenses associated with running that property, gives us something called net operating income. And that net operating income is a very important number, because that is the financial number. That is the, if you will, the economic engine of that investment. What it tells other investors is that if they purchase that asset and if they pay it all cash, and depending on what the capitalization rate is for that type of asset class, they would get a certain rate of return if they just continued to operate the property in the condition that it's in. Yeah. And we are willing to do all that heavy lifting to get that property revalued from a $1 million property that really isn't producing anything into a $2 million property that is producing revenue streams. And those revenue streams for us are producing cash flow. Yeah, even though we've got debt on that property, even though we've got a loan for 80% of the value. Okay, you don't like 80%? Okay, let's go with 75%. There are lenders that'll do 80% on multifamily. They're out there. It is really, really an awesome feeling when you turn a property from the $1 million price point into the $2 million price point. And if you're able to adjust your rents upwards, let's say you just do a $25 a month increase after the first year of ownership, you're looking at a $500 increase per month in rental incomes. It shouldn't affect your expenses. Yeah. And even if you're paying $200 less in the mortgage, that has no bearing on your value. It's that $500 that's coming in. So it's those rental incomes that are the most important thing. And that's the thing that we focus on. When we look at multifamily properties that we're interested in investing in, we look at what the potential for that property to be. In other words, if that property that we're looking at was all fixed up and you were going to rent that property, I'm saying you, like you're a resident now, but you're really the owner. Okay, stick with me here. We look at it through the lens of somebody that would rent from us. So if apartment A across the street is a comparable apartment, it's in good shape and rents are a certain level, and apartment B over here is maybe in inferior shape, but rents are lower, and then apartment C over there is actually a newer, nicer property, and rents are even higher, we're going to take a look at the comps for the rents based on what the market is already producing. And we're going to run our numbers based on the potential for that property to achieve. Yeah. And then we're going to control our expenses, and we're going to figure out what we have to do in order to acquire, remediate, and put back into service that property so that we can get the rental income streams where they need to be. So that now the value of the property has just gone up. Oh, and by the way, most of the data that I have found that talks about affordable housing, it really doesn't talk about the size of the property, the number of the bedrooms, the number of people in your family. It just has to do with, you know, adjusted gross incomes of your customers. It's kind of superlative. I mean, really, I don't even think that was a word. I think I just made up a word. But I went to HoustonTexas.gov because I was curious as to how many people in Houston are actually renting. And according to the government, 57% of Houstonians rent their homes, often at prices that aren't considered affordable. Because you got to remember, there are people that are renting luxury homes. Not everything that's in the marketplace is considered affordable. But the key takeaway there is this. 57% of the people living in Houston rent their properties. They've got to rent from somebody. Now, we're not in the luxury apartment game, and we don't intend to be, although some of our members do buy some of those assets because it makes sense for them. But when you get into the workforce housing element, part of that involves you being at a price point already that should satisfy the government requirements. At least the type of investing we do should make that happen for the government. And if the government wants to give me a break for doing something that they don't do very well, I'm willing to take it. But remember, before you do anything, you have to get an education. Go to freeworkshoplivestream.com.
Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the host, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.